The ABC Radio Network presents Pakistan, A Warning to the West, an exclusive interview with the President of Pakistan, Mohammad Ayub Khan, by ABC correspondent Charles P. Arnault at the Presidential Palace in Karachi. Pakistan, the third point in an Asian triangle, with much at stake in the current conflict between Communist China and India. Pakistan, a divided country, with the eastern and western segments as far apart as New York and Texas. A predominantly Muslim country whose dispute with Hindu India goes back to the granting of independence for the Indian subcontinent following World War II, when Pakistan split off from the rest of India in a bloody division which left the disputed state of Kashmir as a lingering sore. The leader of the country since 1958, President Mohammad Ayub Khan, a friend of the West, particularly of the United States. President Khan has kept his country in both the CENTO and the CETO alliances. He is a staunch anti-communist, whom no one has ever considered soft. But today, with the West arming India, President Ayub Khan is under new stresses. He's a pragmatic man who weighs carefully even the smallest changes in the political and military scenes. The West has had few complaints about the course of Pakistan's foreign policy in the time that President Ayub Khan has been in office. But the time may be growing short. The patience of the Pakistani leader, and he has demonstrated this trait in abundance, may be growing short. There's uncertainty about the direction this young country will take, both from within and outside of Pakistan. The Pakistani president speaks bluntly about new problems facing his country, and therefore the West, in this interview with ABC's Charles P. Arnault.
Mr. President, many observers feel your country is drawing away from the West and moving closer to Red China. Just how have the recent events in India changed or altered your basic foreign policy?
I don't think it'd be correct to say that there is any change, basically, in our foreign policy. The fact that we want to settle a border dispute with China is a thing that has been the part of our foreign policy and is part of our general desire to have friendly relations with our neighbors. And China is one of our neighbors. And that is the basis on which we have been trying to work towards a settlement with India as well. Before the agreement was mutually agreed upon between China and Pakistan over the settlement of border dispute, certain events took place as a result of Sino-Indian conflict. And the rush of arms by the West greatly alarmed our people. For two reasons. One was that here we are, very old friends of United States and Britain, and allied to them, and they didn't even care to consult us over a matter of this nature. We don't claim any right of veto or anything like that on the foreign policy of our friendly countries, but we had some right to expect as to what United States or Britain was going to do in a crisis like this. And they rushed a lot of arms to India. We know that it isn't through lack of arms in the hands of the Indian army that they suffered any reverses they did. There are several other reasons why this probably has happened. We also know that India really basically has no desire to fight China. In any case, to fight any decisive battles in a very difficult terrain of Himalayas is military nonsense.
For many years, sir, Pakistan has been a pivot nation in both the CETO and CENTO anti-communist defense alliances. What future role do you foresee Pakistan playing in these defense pacts?
Well, our future role is quite frankly very uncertain. I must be very frank with you, and that is this, with so much of accretion of military power in India and enlargement of their military forces, we really are very heavily committed now to the defense of our territories. And quite frankly, it would be very difficult for us to make any contribution elsewhere. So you can imagine that because of these circumstances, our own security problems have increased enormously.
Do you foresee possibly that Pakistan may withdraw from these pacts?
Well, there has been, you know, a good deal of discussion in our country over this, as to what extent these pacts are giving us any form of assurance of security. Of course, when we talk about security, it doesn't matter from which side you are attacked. It makes no difference whether you are attacked by one country or another. The result is the same. We wanted security both from, shall we say, from any communist country as well as from India, because immediately we have been threatened for the last 15 years by India, intimidated and so on. And the pacts didn't give us the substance of that. And so people are wondering whether how much value there is in these pacts, really, as far as our total security is concerned.
Would you say President Kennedy was right or wrong in supplying arms aid to India following the attacks by Red China? Do you feel betrayed by the United States in this latest move, as longtime allies in CETO and CENTO?
I wouldn't go that far, but one thing is becoming quite clear, that the line between friends and those that have not been friends is now getting very obliterated.
Mr. President, some Pakistanis have told me their big worry is that Prime Minister Nehru will make a peace deal with China and then turn his newly acquired American arms against Pakistan. Do you feel India's assurances that these U.S. arms will be used only against China is sufficient guarantee for your country?
Well, it's not only a feeling, but anyhow, amongst thinking people, we don't want to see fighting around us and in this part of the world. We would like to see India and China settle their problems amicably. And I think this may well happen. Events may force it on India as well as on China to come to settlement of some sort. And the Chinese have been making offers. Whether they are acceptable offers to India or not is a different thing. India is saying, well, these are not acceptable offers. And so the trend is in that direction. The trend is towards either negotiated peace or a stalemate. So therefore, what are these arms going to do? You see? Meanwhile, India is expanding her army by 6 divisions and so on and so forth. And it's not unknown before that they have intimidated smaller countries around them. And we will certainly come under much greater pressure as a result of it.
Well, looking at the question from the other side, is there any justification for expressed Indian fears that Pakistan may capitalize on this moment when India is preoccupied with Red China to try to settle the Kashmir problem by force?
Well, it's a hypothetical question. Will India ever be embroiled to that extent in these mountains? Will she ever be able to employ that number of troops that she'll be vulnerable for us to march into India? After all, India already has 3 times our strength in the armed forces. She's expanding that, and she's doing that for 2 reasons. One is to be able to have an army to meet the Chinese and an army to contain Pakistan. And that is what they are really, in effect, trying to get your governments to support. Because of lack of settlement over Kashmir, because of this unfortunate situation in which the best part of the Indian Army and best part of Pakistan Army are facing each other over the ceasefire line in India and on the Indo-Pakistan borders.
Well, sir, on the Kashmir question itself, your delegation to the latest talks, I believe, presented again the proposal for a plebiscite to settle the Kashmir, future of Kashmir. Do you believe it would be possible to hold a plebiscite on economic and political grounds, as Prime Minister Nehru has now suggested?
Well, it's like this, that plebiscite is the best answer. There's no doubt about it. It's the best human answer. It's the best recognized international answer. Well, there are certain areas, really, which are clear-cut. We know which way will they vote. And our feeling has been that we can perhaps reduce the area of disagreement where finally a plebiscite can be held. Now, it's true that the bulk of the population is Muslim population, except in Jammu, perhaps. But when it comes to plebiscite and giving a vote, there are so many considerations by which human beings are moved, even in ordinary elections. Look at the number of factors that affect individuals. They be emotional, sometimes quite irrational, sometimes rational things, sometimes economic factors, sometimes religious factors, ideological factors. So how do you dissect the human, shall we say, mental outlook and say, well, all right, shut off all your, shall we say, religious affinities or ideological affinities or either another form of affinity. Just think of economics and just think of culture and just think of this, that, and other. Can you artificially do that? Keep the following factors into consideration when they're voting is something, is just like rigging an election, isn't it?
Well, do you believe it is possible to reach any solution over this 15-year-old Kashmir dispute so long as Prime Minister Nehru is in power in India?
Well, I'm not pessimistic. I'm not over-optimistic, nor am I pessimistic. Because human nature is curious. If reality was to dawn on him, and the realization that friendship of Pakistan is of a very great consequence to India and its future, I believe it can be settled. I believe it can be settled. And you never know, this idea may also dawn on Mr. Nehru, even at this late stage.
You are planning, I believe, sir, a summit meeting with Mr. Nehru on this question at some future point?
If there is any meeting ground on principles, yes.
As a result of these talks that are now going on,
yes.
Which will resume in Delhi, I believe, in mid-January.
Yes.
It all depends upon this ground.
Absolutely.
What is your reaction to a suggestion I heard put unofficially in India recently that the United Nations take over the administration of Kashmir for, say, 10 or 20 years to eliminate the tension and until some final and equitable solution could be worked out? Would you favor such a suggestion?
Well, I personally think that it will be an impractical idea for two or three reasons. United Nations as it is a sinking bank, isn't it? It can't meet its bills, and several countries are not prepared to pay their shares for the maintenance of the commitments that United Nations has taken in several places. Look at the Congo, for instance. The Secretary General can't find the money to support the forces that he's managed to get together there. And I think similar situation will arise here. Then Kashmir became the cockpit of international politics. I think if such a contingency is to arise, and India and Pakistan and us, we agree on such a basis, then I think it would be better if a Commonwealth force was to take it over. That's a non-controversial force, so that it doesn't become the cockpit of world politics. I personally think United Nations coming in, perhaps would not be a good idea.
How would a Commonwealth force deal with the present Chinese, Red Chinese occupation of part of Ladakh in northeastern Kashmir, would you suppose, sir?
Well, I don't suppose they'd be interested in that.
Well, what are your minimum conditions, Pakistan's minimum conditions for settlement of the Kashmir dispute?
Well, our minimum conditions are really these, that we have interest in Kashmir, vital interest as a result of now distribution of Indus Basin waters. We have lost three waters of three rivers and only left with the three rivers that all come from Kashmir. And they can only be controlled in Kashmir area because that is a hilly area. And we need every drop of that water. Then we have our affinity with the people of Kashmir. They have affinity with us. Also, economically, they're so much dependent on the areas of Pakistan. Communications are much more natural between them and us than between India and them. And so for several reasons, we have vital interest in Kashmir. Then India has certain amount of interest. Then the people of Kashmir also have a voice. So I say that any solution which is reasonably acceptable to the three elements would be a good solution.
Mr. President, there seems to be some feeling in the West today that Pakistan and India have almost changed roles. Previously, Pakistan was warning India about the Red Chinese threat, and today, India is warning Pakistan about the same threat. I wonder if this is a fair comparison.
No, I don't think that's a valid comparison. It's very great oversimplification. There's no doubt about it that powerful neighbors are always, from the smaller countries' point of view, always suspect. And smaller countries have right to suspect. And of course, as far as we are concerned, we were always being intimidated by India and not by Red China. So far this has been the position. But I don't know where the reversal comes in. But what we say is this, the Red Chinese intentions and objectives in Tibet are limited. And that's effective life. Because militarily, it cannot become a base for a major offensive operation against a huge subcontinent. It doesn't make military sense, it can't. Because the supplies start coming over land routes from about 5,000 miles away. And so no military man could really make a plan like that. If invasion of India was intended, then there are other ways of invading India. Much easier ways. Through much softer areas, you see? And so that's why we say that the Chinese aims are limited today. And certainly they are limited in Tibet. They want to secure their boundary, whichever boundary they think belongs to them.
You do not agree with Prime Minister Nehru then that Red China in this part of the world is an expansionist and imperialist power?
I'm not talking, I really can't comment on that. Mr. Nehru, not until very long ago, said that wasn't so. I mean, he himself used to say that. What I say is this, that any if they have such ideas, the Chinese have, then they can't do it based from Tibet. I mean, that doesn't make military sense.
Are you planning to sign any pacts with Red China?
No, there's nothing in the air, and nothing is mooted or anything like that, no.
Foreign Minister Muhammad Ali, I understand, is making a visit sometime in the future to Peking.
Yes.
Are you planning to make a visit to Peking?
No, not me. He's been invited, and the main reason he'll go for is really to sign this agreement on the border agreement. Perhaps it'll be the main purpose for which he'll go there.
And you are discussing increased trade at the moment with the Red Chinese, are you not?
Well, that we are discussing with every country, with the ECM coming into being, with tariff barriers being raised against us, and quota restrictions and so on, we'll find ourselves in great difficulty. And we shall have to diversify our trade. We are going to find it very difficult to sell our... You see, we are reaching a stage where we are producing finished goods and semi-processed goods and so on and so forth. We'll find it very difficult to compete in the European market. And so we are up against a tremendous problem now, you see, of diversification of our trade. And our trade has been oriented towards Europe for the last, 200 years, ever since the British occupation. Change that pattern will take an enormous amount of effort and an enormous amount of time.
It appears, Mr. President, that the United States is caught in one of those dilemmas with which we have become so familiar in other parts of the world. The dilemma now, of course, is between Pakistan and India. Can you tell me how the United States can reassure the people of Pakistan of American friendly intentions at this critical time?
Well, I think one thing that the Americans should do and lend their weight and full weight, really, in settlement of Kashmir problem. Because the effect of that will be that the Indian and the Pakistan armies will disengage from each other. They'll be free from fear from us, and we shall be free from fear from them. And I think the Americans are in a position to do so. And they should have no hesitation and shyness in using their influence. Because if they are required to assist India, then India must also create a situation whereby your commitments and her commitments are not enlarged. Today, what in effect they are asking you to do is to give them the resources so that they can have an army against China and also with their old resources, shall we say, be able to intimidate Pakistan.
Do you believe that the events of the past 12 months, particularly the Indian-Chinese fighting of the past 3 months, will lead to some new major power alignment in Asia?
Well, it all depends what happens during the course of this year, or what happens after the snows melt and so on in the Himalayas, where the Chinese and the Indians are facing each other. I don't foresee any major conflict flaring up again. And if it doesn't, then I don't see any great change. The only change that can take place is India wearing more and more towards the West, or anyhow depending more and more on the West for military support and so on. But if this conflict flares up again, I think that process will be speeding, perhaps. That's the sort of change I see, really. Other countries in Asia are not just immediately affected, would be affected by this conflict.
And what role, sir, do you see the Soviet Union playing in all of this?
I think Soviet Union would not like to see a flare-up again between India and China. She will continue to support India. And I believe that whatever influence she has on China, she'll continue to use it with China in favor of India.
And during the next year, do you feel there's any chance of Pakistan, shall we say, joining the bloc of non-aligned countries?
I don't think so. I don't think so. No. I don't think so, unless some very unforeseeable situation, which I can't predict, I can't visualize, I can't imagine. I don't see such a thing happening. We have no intention of putting ourselves in a position where we want to blackmail anybody or anything like that. All we want to make certain is that our safety and security is not endangered. And if our friends do see to that, then there should be no necessity of changing or forcing us to change our stand.
Thank you, President Ayub Khan.
Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
Charles B. Arno, ABC, at the Presidential Residence in Karachi.
From this interview with Pakistan's President Ayub Khan, the West can derive little comfort. We can say we know where we stand. President Ayub has made it clear he is on our side, but all his potential enemies are not our own. The giant that Pakistan fears is India, the same country now receiving our military hardware for defense against China. An India that was able to block negotiations on Kashmir for so many years is now being made stronger, largely through help from the United States. Pakistan seems to have begun a search for new ways to guarantee its security and to advance what it feels are legitimate objectives. What can the West do to prevent a drift or even a sudden change in Pakistan's attitude and direction? That is the question, and the West has had its warning. The ABC Radio Network has presented Pakistan, A Warning to the West, an interview by ABC correspondent Charles P. Arno with the President of Pakistan, Mohammad Ayub Khan.
Fun to spare on Flair weekday on the ABC Radio Network.